Support for this program comes from Bloomsterhouse, filled with plants and herb starts for the spring. Open 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday. Bloomsterhouse on Main Street, Facebook, and at 907-772-2566.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pick. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things. Money came by, and that's true love. Homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure. But it's nothing the homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, what'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
This life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love. Homegrown tomatoes, what'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to In the Garden. I'm your host, Daniel Rowan Tucker. The fall rains have arrived, and we're getting some of that monsoon-like precipitation as relatively warm air from over the Pacific brings in a heavy load of moisture to collide with our mountainous terrain. Rivers, creeks, ditches, and downspouts are all gushing with this liquid bounty, and before you start scrolling for tickets to Baja, just remember, the weather always looks worse from indoors. Find something interesting to do out in the rain for at least a few hours. Have enough fun that you forget that it's raining in the first place, and then come back in all wet and bedraggled and get roasty toasty by a blazing fire. Hot beverages optional but recommended. That's how life in this climate is meant to be lived. Today I want to dive into the language of horticulture and botany. Because demystifying a few of those intimidating Latin and Greek words can unlock a whole world of knowledge that is the stock in trade of professional plant people. Like any trade, botany and horticulture have their own language. The endless variations of leaves, flowers, and fruits has spawned a vast lexicon of special words to describe and compare them. And these descriptive terms also carry over to the botanical names of many plants. Why do botanical names matter? Because they tend to be more informative and reliable than common names. Common names blow around like leaves in the wind. What one person calls Sitka rose is a rugosa rose or Japanese rose to somebody else, or even a sea tomato or lech berry to another. They are all botanically known as Rosa rugosa, the wrinkled rose. Cultivars derived from that species can be described by adding the cultivar name after the genus and species, with single quotation marks, Rosa rugosa, quote, Fru Dagmar Hastrup, end quote. For example, a variety named after a certain Danish lady. Botanical names do change from time to time, especially as new genetic research reveals the arrangement of plant families more clearly. But there are certain standards for these name changes that keep botanists on the same page, most of the time. These name changes are governed by the International Code of Nomenclature for Algae, Fungi, and Plants, or ICNAFP, a code which can only be modified by an International Botanical Congress organized by the International Association for Plant Taxonomy. Our native yellow cedar has gone through many name changes over the years as different botanists, using different methods of analysis, shuffled it from one genus to another, from Cupressus to Camei cyperus to Xanthocyperus to Calotropsis. It is currently known as Calotropsis nutcatensis. The names of cultivated plant varieties, or cultivars, which means plants bred and selected by mankind from the vast array of nature's wild plants, are governed by the International Code of Nomenclature for Cultivated Plants, or ICNCP. And here we can get into some fun legal wordplay involving the trademarking of plant names. If you buy plants from a nursery, you've probably noticed that many flashy new plant varieties these days sport catchy trademark names like the Starfield Hydrangea or Fairy Trail Bride Hydrangea varieties. According to the ICNCP, the actual botanically recognized cultivar name cannot be trademarked, but so-called trade designations are not so restricted. So, large-scale plant breeders give a new plant a cultivar name that sounds like gibberish, which doesn't inspire anyone to pull out their wallet, and then they create a registered trademark name which sounds sexy, and then they can charge royalties from nurseries and distributors who want to propagate and sell that plant under that trade designation. So, the actual cultivar, official cultivar name of the Starfield Hydrangea is Hydrangea macrophylla, quote, Hortma farfa, end quote, and Fairy Trail Bride is, in fact, Hydrangea cross, quote, USHYD0405, end quote. So, if you think that you can sell a plant called Hortma farfa, go ahead and start taking cuttings. One more clue to parsing out these differences is that an official cultivar name is always framed in single quotation marks, while a trade designation is supposed to be in double quotation marks. Just an example of what you find when reading the fine print. Now, enough of man-made deceptions. Let's get back to the plants themselves. There is a whole language of descriptive words for parts of plants, or botanical terms. Wikipedia offers a free and accessible glossary of botanical terms, and we'll go through a few of them here that might be useful in your garden, or when you're trying to identify a plant you've never seen before. Acuminate, tapering gradually to a point, with concave sides approaching the point. Contrast acute and mucronate. Many broadleaf plants here sport more or less acuminate tips that help them shed rainwater efficiently, like those of cottonwood and salmonberry. Adventitious, produced in an unpredictable or unusual position, such as an adventitious bud produced from a stem rather than from the more typical axil of a leaf. Adventitious roots may develop from nodes of prostrate stems of some plant species, or from the hypocotyl rather than from the radical of a germinating monocotyledon. This means from a different part of the seedling rather than from where the root usually pops out. Willow trees can produce adventitious roots from almost anywhere on their stems or trunks, which makes them very easy to propagate. And if you peel the bark of a willow tree, you'll often notice these pointy little bumps sticking up all over the place. And those are little dormant adventitious buds that are just waiting to sprout or to take root if the tree falls over. Willow trees having these adventitious buds all over the place. If the whole tree falls to the ground and it's still getting sunlight and you know, otherwise in a good place to grow, it'll just grow new roots out of the side of the trunk and sprout back up and start growing from that new place. It's one of the wonderful advantages of being a willow tree. Angiosperm, a flowering plant. A plant with developing seeds enclosed in an ovary. Nearly everything we grow in our gardens are angiosperms, unless you happen to be a collector of conifers, mosses, ferns, or horsetails. Biennial, a plant which completes its life cycle, meaning germinates, reproduces, and dies within 2 years or two growing seasons. Biennial plants usually form a basal rosette of leaves in the first year and then flower and fruit in the second year. Foxglove is a common example. Cespitos, tufted or turf-like, such as the growth form of some grasses and sedges. One of our most common beech and slough grasses is Deschampsia cespitosa, or tufted hair grass. Not a super showy individual, but probably commonly you've probably seen it growing out from between the boulders anywhere along the narrows. It's sort of a tufty grass with feathery little seed heads. Cauliflory, adjective cauliflorus, having flowers or fruits growing directly from a tree's trunk. Okay, think about that. When's the last time you saw a flower growing out of the trunk of a tree? Probably not very often. Around here, I don't know that we have any species that do this. It tends to show up in tropical species like cacao and some species of ficus. But we can grow cauliflower, which has a similar appearance, hence the name, cauliflower. Chimera, an individual composed of two or more genetically distinct tissues, most commonly as a result of a graft, and sometimes by mutations that occur during cell division or cellular transfers during seed development. Rare and fascinating. Okay, think about that. Two different genetically distinct tissues growing into one plant. This is like a Frankenplant, but sort of naturally occurring. These are very rare. There's a graft hybrid of broom and golden chain, Scotch broom and golden chain, also known as laburnum, where the flowers are one species, I forget which, and then the bark and the twigs are the other species. So they're kind of growing intertwined with each other within. And then hawthorn and medlar also have a really strange graft hybrid along those lines. I believe it's called Cretego mespilus, something like that. Anyways, really fun fact. I saw a shell of a chimera lobster once in a museum in Ireland. Really weird. One side of the shell was red. The other side of the shell was blue, like in a line down the middle. Super weird. Columnar. Shaped like a column, as in our commonly grown arborvita varieties, Thuja occidentalis, quote, pyramidalis, end quote. You see those all over town. They're the tidy little pyramid cone-shaped evergreen shrubs that are perfect to use as a sort of privacy hedge, the kind of the classic suburban privacy hedge. So columnar trees are often top picks for hedges and other tight spaces like that. Fastigiate is another adjective that's often used for those types of plants, including the Lombardy poplar with those tall, upswept branches growing straight up in a line. So columnar, fastigiate, kind of interchangeable, but fastigiate indicates more that the branches are growing straight up most of the time, whereas columnar is the branches could be going any direction as long as the entire plant stays within kind of a strict column shape. Deciduous, dehisking and falling seasonally, as with bark, leaves, or petals. Contrast with persistent. We're about to see a whole lot of deciduous leaves falling to the ground. Sometimes the term deciduous is also applied to people's baby teeth because they fall out. Dentate, toothed, especially in reference to leaf margins. Who knew plants had so many teeth? Think of alder and salmonberry leaves. They might also use the term serrate, meaning like the teeth of a saw. There are many different forms of dentition or serration on the edges of plant leaves, so hence we have so many words to describe them. And it can be a very crucial key to identification or parsing out different varieties, looking closely at the pattern of dentition. Is there one small tooth and then one larger tooth and one smaller, or, what exactly is the pattern there? Epicormic, used to refer to buds, shoots, or flowers developing from the old wood of trees, especially after injury or fire. This is something that arborists are very familiar with because, let's say, for example, you have a big spruce tree, and it's growing tall with other trees packed close around it, and, it's shed most of the original branches that grew up the trunk, and it's got smooth bark growing over most of the trunk, and then somebody cuts down a bunch of the other trees. All of a sudden, sunlight is hitting the lower trunk, where the old branches had all fallen away. It will start to sprout new branches eventually, and they'll just pop right out of the trunk any old where, but those new branches won't be anchored deeply into the middle of the trunk the way the old branches were, because the new epicormic branches are just growing on the surface of the trunk, as it were. And so if you're climbing a tree, if you're an arborist or a logger climbing up that tree, you know better than to risk putting your weight on those epicormic branches because they're very shallowly attached to the trunk and they could easily pop right off. It's not like the normal branches of the tree that started growing when the tree was much smaller and hence have an anchor all the way into the tree. So tree climbers, be aware of that. Etiolation, weak growth due to lack of light, resulting in elongated stems and yellowish color. You could also just say spindly looking, but knowing that there is an official botanical term for when plants get that stretched out, light-starved appearance, it helps you realize that it is a universal condition. When a plant doesn't get enough light, it's going to get etiolated. Habit, the general external appearance of a plant, including size, shape, texture, and orientation. Halophyte, a plant adapted to living in highly saline habitats, a plant that accumulates high concentrations of salt in its tissues. We've got a few of these around here, like goose tongue and pickleweed, that grow in a certain band of the intertidal zone, and they're very tasty and succulent and salty. Other parts of the world in desert climates have large swaths of halophytes growing inland, in places that have naturally salty soils, alkali flats, things like that. It's a particularly stressful environment. Most plants really don't like salt, but the exception to the rule is halophytes. Inflorescence, several flowers closely grouped together to form an efficient structured unit, the grouping or arrangement of flowers on a plant. Wild celery comes to mind here, with many small flowers clustered together in the large flat-topped inflorescences that are an iconic summer sight along our roadsides and beaches. So what we might usually call the flower of a wild celery is really the inflorescence, because it's a whole bunch of little tiny flowers all packed together. Lenticel, typically lenticular, meaning lens-shaped, porous tissue in the bark of trees or shrubs with large intercellular spaces that allow for direct exchange of gases between the internal tissues and the atmosphere through the bark. So it's like a little mouth in the tree bark that lets the tree breathe in and out through its bark. And you commonly see these on alder and younger mountain ash trees, and also on birch trees and probably some others that I'm not thinking of, possibly currants as well. I feel like they look like they have lenticels on them. Just another example of how cool trees are. They breathe through their bark. Monocarpic, flowering and setting seed only once before dying. Around here, this applies to most of our annual plants and to the few species of bamboo that can be grown here. In other places, one could find monocarps like the agave or century plant, so named because it flowers after a century of vegetative growth in some cases. Mycorrhiza, plural mycorrhizae, I think. Adjective mycorrhizal. This is one of several types of symbiotic associations between a fungus and the roots of a plant. So in our region, these mycorrhiza are really important for many plants, especially in the heather family, like blueberries and huckleberries, because our native soils tend to be very acidic and low in a lot of nutrients. Many plants are very dependent on their fungal partners to help them get minerals and nutrients, and in exchange, the plants trade sugars to the fungi in exchange for getting the minerals, and then the fungi take those sugars and make their fruiting bodies, which we call mushrooms. At least that's how I understand it. Orbicular, meaning flat and more or less circular. Not many plants here have leaves of the orbicular shape, although those of the katsura tree come close, and also the aspen, if you manage to grow an aspen here. Palmate, having a leaf with veins radiating out from a central point, usually at the top of the petiole, resembling spread out fingers pointing away from the palm, hence palmate. Maples, currants, and horse chestnuts all fit that bill for us. Pinnate, a compound leaf with leaflets arranged on each side of a common petiole or axis, also apply to how the lateral veins are arranged in relation to the main vein. Think of roses and mountain ash. Mountain ash is very easily recognizable pinnate leaf, or you could say a bipinnate, because it has two leaflets in pairs. Rhizome, a perennial underground stem, usually growing horizontally. Also see stolon. That's kind of a synonym. So a rhizome you would typically find on something like an iris plant, dogwoods. Also, you know, it's where the root, you have kind of a thick central stem of the root growing out horizontally and then other rootlets coming down from it, straight down into the ground. And these plants tend to be easy to divide, by root cuttings. You know, you pull up that big long rhizome and you can snip it into some little finger-sized chunks and in many cases propagate a whole bunch of little baby plants off of those. Rootstock, the part of a budded or grafted plant which supplies the root system, also simply called a stock in the trade. So rootstocks are super important. If you've bought any fruit trees, more likely than not they are grafted onto a rootstock of some kind. It's really good to learn to identify your rootstocks. Ask your supplier what the rootstock is, look it up, find out what its attributes are, figure out if it's a good match for where we are. Knowing the rootstock is at least as important as knowing the fruiting variety or the scion when it comes to any kind of fruit trees here. Also, people may not be aware, many ornamentals are also grafted. Maple trees are commonly grafted, often just onto a seedling of the same species. Roses are grafted sometimes. Grafting is used for a variety of things, but in any case, the roots are their own distinct variety, so the growth of the roots is going to have a huge impact on how the rest of the plant grows. So what the rootstock is very important. Saprophyte, a saprophytic plant, or loosely speaking, a fungus or similar organism, deriving its nourishment from decaying organic matter, such as dead wood or humus, and usually lacking chlorophyll. So around here, keep an eye peeled for the slender pink stalks of the coral root, Corallorhiza mertensiana. This is a saprophytic orchid which can be found in our forests sometimes. Looks like little pink sort of candy canes with little tiny fairy-like orchid flowers growing up from the top, often found under big trees where there's lots of rotting twigs and leaves and things. Taproot, the primary descending root of a plant with a single dominant root axis. So sort of the opposite of a rhizome. And this is, you know, the classic carrot-shaped taproot. But many other trees and shrubs also have taproot-shaped roots. And they tend to be quite sensitive to waterlogging. Trees that are more tolerant of waterlogging are usually ones that have a very shallow spreading root system that spreads out like a fan. Taprooted trees, generally, they need good drainage, and often they're very drought tolerant, where drought is an issue, which is not so much around here these days. Xylem, a specialized water-conducting tissue in vascular plants. Don't leave that rope tied around that tree, or you'll constrict the xylem and kill it. Phew! Now that you've loaded up your mental satchel with some fancy botanical terms, my hope is that you'll take a closer look at the marvelous forms of living plants all around us and get to know the inhabitants of your own garden a bit more intimately. Whenever we look closely at nature, we find miracles. And hopefully, these words might help you out in your next game of Scrabble or just to impress your friends and neighbors with some fancy botanical lingo. That's all for today, folks. Thanks for listening.
Support for this program comes from Bloomsterhus, filled with plants and supplies for the spring, like trees, shrubs, and potting soil. Open on Main Street, 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday, and at 907-772-2566.
There ain't nothing in the world that I like.